Welcome to another week of Free Basketball. I am your solo host for the week, Brian Meadows. It is Valentine's Day. I haven't heard from Cody, so I assume he's busy. This week, we are going to talk about All-Star Weekend a little bit. I want to talk about the really interesting MVP race that's kind of forming right now that no one is really talking about. I know they had, you know, on the national media circuit over the past couple of days, a straw poll for MVP. So it's starting to heat up a little bit, but I want to give my thoughts about it because I think it's pretty interesting. And then we'll talk a little bit about the Grizzlies post-trade deadline, which if you listened to the episode last week, we called it the deadline because everybody gets hyped up about it and nothing really happens. Well, nothing really happened. There was a lot of little moves that don't really matter. There were some interesting buyouts and, you know, like Spencer Dinwiddie gets bought out. He gets picked up by Lakers. Kyle Lowry gets bought out. He ends up with the 76ers. So there's little stuff like that, but there wasn't anything huge. So huge and interesting, I guess, so we should say that I'm going to spend time talking about. The only thing I'm going to talk about is, you know, the two players that left the Grizzlies in David Roddy and Xavier Tillman. So we'll talk about that at the end. So I'm not going to rehash any trade deadline stuff for the most part for the general NBA. I want to talk mainly about what's coming up this weekend with All-Star Weekend and the coming MVP race. So let's start with All-Star Weekend here. Here's my thoughts about All-Star Weekend. Who cares? I mean, who? I know that's probably a bad thing to say as a, you know, someone who covers the NBA and as an NBA fan, but honestly, do you really enjoy All-Star Weekend anymore? I'll watch it because, you know, I just kind of have to, right? Because I guess something could happen where you want to be able to say you watched it live, right? But with kind of like the highlight culture that you can get highlights right away, you're not really missing much from All-Star Weekend. So All-Star Weekend has been on a downward trajectory for a long time. And all this stuff kind of around it with the skills challenge, three-point shootout, the dunk contest, definitely the dunk contest. There's not a lot going on that is interesting. About the only interesting thing for me personally is Vince Williams Jr. being in the Rising Stars game, right? Like he got the nomination because of a health substitution, which he should have been in it in the first place, but it's nice to see him in that. So it'll be fun to see him kind of do his quirky, you know, herky-jerky style in the Rising Stars Challenge game. But that's really, like, that's all I have to talk about All-Star Weekend. No picks, no nothing. Nothing to look for. I don't know if you're like me. Do you really care that much? Is it just like a little break from regular season games, kind of like how players view it? So I'll watch it just like probably the rest of you will, rest of you NBA fans will. But do I really care that much? And the honest answer at this point is no. So let's go to the MVP race, which I think is really interesting. Now, I'm using the gambling odds, current gambling odds. These fluctuate all the time. But I'm using the current gambling odds because I think it's kind of interesting because MVP race, yes, you have to have a statistical, like you have to have really nice numbers. Your team also has to typically do really well in the regular season, have to typically be a top seed. And also, there is a narrative factor to the voting process behind this. I mean, it is a national media, which can have a bias. And so the front runner right now, or at least it was a couple weeks ago before he was injured and going to be out for a period of time, is Joel Embiid. And now he's just flat off the board because he's most likely not going to hit the new 65-game threshold required by the NBA this year to qualify for these awards. So he immediately, Joel Embiid for the longest time was leading in the MVP race odds. Now he's completely out of it. And now Nikola Jokic has become the, not heavy favorite, but he's the running favorite right now. Like, I think the lowest odds you can get on him right now is at MGM, and it's -155. Like, some other books are dealing -170, -160. So he is currently the odds on favorite. I mean, it's like a, 58 to 60% based on the numbers, but these fluctuate all the time. The thing is I don't really think Nikola Jokic should be the front runner for MVP. I love Jokic. He is a great player. He's a top three, top five NBA player currently. But for this season, I don't think he should be the front runner for it. So I'm going to try to find a couple guys that might have some value here that might be fun for you to place a couple bucks on if you do that kind of thing. If not, or just kind of see how the narrative shifts because the added 65 game threshold has kind of thrown a little interesting wrench in this. And for Jokic right now, he's averaging 26 points, right at 12 rebounds, right at 9 assists. I think he's played like 53 of their 54 games or 52 of their 54 games. So he only has 12 to 13-ish games to go to hit that 65 game threshold. And, right at All-Star break, most teams are going to be at 54 to 55 games, 56 games right in that range. So he has about 26 to 27 games to go. So is Jokic just kind of at this point where he's just trying to get to that 65 game threshold, right? Like, are we going to start seeing right after he hits 65, like the most he might play is 68, 70? We saw this last year with the Nuggets when they kind of secured the one seed. They had started to sit all their players, or if their guys are playing, they weren't playing a lot of minutes or they weren't playing very hard. So is he just trying to get to that 65 games so he can be eligible for the All-NBAs? Because we know that affects contracts, the amount of money, the length, all that kind of stuff. So that is important for Jokic and all these players, obviously. But is Jokic just kind of. Does he kind of feel like he's just trying to make it to 65? That's kind of the sense that I get from him this year. Because if he indeed won it this year, it would be his third in 4 years. We know that Embiid won it last year. Embiid was probably on track to go back to back this year if he had stayed healthy. But this would be Jokic's third MVP in 4 years. This is where the narrative side comes into it, which I know, well, I shouldn't say media people are smart. Some of them that cover the NBA are smart, but I do think there will be an underlying bias to this where, guys that we're going to talk about here in a second, where it will start to become a narrative shift to move it away from Jokic. Now, the only caveat to the thing about Jokic getting to the 65 game threshold is that last year they could do that, they could coast because they had secured the one seed. And they had such a wide margin, even over our beloved Grizzlies, that they could take off essentially for a month before the playoffs. They're currently, I believe, fourth in the West. Now they're only like a game or two behind the one seed, but they're also only like 4 or 5 games above the play-in. So it's not really like they can take off here. They don't have the cushion like they did last season. So should Jokic be the front runner for what he's done? Probably. Do I think he ultimately will become the winner, a third MVP in 4 years? I'm not sold on that yet. That's why I think the MVP race is interesting, because after All-Star break in this final 25 to 27 game push, someone could just light on fire that's right behind him and really overtake him, especially if he's only trying to get to that 65 to 68 game threshold. So it's really interesting to see going forward. But the cheapest you can find Jokic right now, if you like Jokic, is, I believe, -155 at MGM. Someone can double check that for me, see if there's a better number. But that's on quick glance before I came on here. That is the cheapest number that I saw for him. Second currently in MVP voting. And the guy that I like for a little bit of value here is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander of the Oklahoma City Thunder. He's currently, I think the best number you can find him at is +260 on MGM. Currently averaging 31 points, 5.5 rebounds, 6.5 assists. The numbers, obviously, scoring's better than Jokic, but but the rebounds and assists are not as gaudy as Jokic. Now, he's the same kind of internal engine like Jokic is. Everything runs through Jokic for the Nuggets. The same for SGA. Everything kind of runs through SGA. Even though they do a five-out approach, everybody can dribble, everybody can pass, everybody can shoot, or at least attempt to shoot. It's run by SGA. He's the linchpin for all of it, just like how Jokic is. The thing for me is the new narrative thing for SGA. He has been on Oklahoma City for a few years now, and Oklahoma City has gotten better every single year. Last year, he was a surprise with averaging 30-plus points per game, and he was nowhere near this list because OKC did not have a good record. Well, now OKC currently is 37-17, second in the West. This is where I think we'll start to see some narrative shift to where, hey, SGA, his team's not only higher ranked in the West than the Denver Nuggets, he's got, you know, he's better scorer, and yes, he doesn't have the rebounds and assists as Jokic, but he's a guy who's improved every year and is now carrying, quote-unquote, this Oklahoma City Thunder team to a top two seed in the West. I do think that is a narrative shift that is going to kind of be like a snowball rolling downhill, right? Like, I think this could pick up for SGA. Now, SGA has also played 50-plus games so far, I believe. He's going to hit that 65-game threshold. Oklahoma City is young enough to where I don't think they'll strategize this where he'll only play, you know, the bare minimum 65 to 70. Like, I think he's going to get up to 72, 74, 75, if I remember his games played currently correctly. But I only think he's missed maybe two, maybe three games for them so far. So SGA could have a really nice run coming out of All-Star break if he can avoid injury here, right? So to me, I think I would have SGA as more so even with Jokic, gambling number odds-wise. I think he's certainly going to have a narrative shift here soon, where the ball's going to start rolling for him and people are going to start talking about him being the actual MVP more, especially if OKC continues to stay the top two seed. But that's what's fun about this, is that OKC could kind of have a disaster last 25, 27 games, and it's talking about SGA, it completely falls apart for him. Giannis is third currently. He's moved up to plus 650. He's averaging almost 31 points per game, 11.4 rebounds, 6.3 assists. The problem is, I mean, I guess it's not a problem. The Bucks are 35-20. They're third in the East. We know they've had this weird kind of coaching shift mid-season. Now it's Doc Rivers, and they didn't exactly start out the gates kind of hot here. There's just something about the Bucks and Giannis this year that I just don't like. I couldn't quite wrap my head around it or explain it properly right now. I'd probably have to bounce off the conversation with someone else to kind of flesh out all the reasons why. But there's just something about Giannis where I don't really believe, like, he's actually someone who should be MVP. He has the numbers to back it up. I just don't know about the team. They're third in the East, so certainly it's a good enough team to kind of, quote-unquote, qualify for a typical guy who wins MVP. He's obviously the best team. I mean, he's obviously the best player on a top three team in the East. That's where they are right now. I just don't see Giannis as someone who's actually an MVP, which is odd because the numbers say that he is. But I do think there is kind of a narrative thing with Giannis. I don't know. Like, obviously, with the previous head coach, there's probably not a huge media love contingency for the head coach. So I don't think that would be a narrative hit to Giannis. But I do think there might kind of be like he did get a coach fired who was, you know, 30-13 or whatever it was when they fired him, when they fired Adrian Griffin, I just don't think there's like a narrative like SGA having that snowball rolling downhill narrative. I just don't see that kind of thing for Giannis happening. But next in line, Luka Doncic, he's plus 1200, the best odds I think I could find on him. He's averaging a whopping 34 points per game, almost 9 rebounds, 8.8 rebounds, and almost 10 assists, 9.6 assists. He's almost averaging that classic, triple double. The problem is Dallas is 31 and 23, which isn't a miserable record, but in the Western Conference, it is only good for seventh right now in the West. And I don't think we've had an MVP where a team was in the play-in, or where an MVP came from a team who ended up in the play-in. Now, the Mavs, since the trade deadline, adding PJ Washington, Daniel Gafford from the Wizards, have won, I think, five games in a row, if not more. So they're having a nice little run here, but it's still only led to 8 games above 500, seventh in the West. So things could fall apart. Lukic does have the broken nose kind of thing. He's wearing the mask. I don't know if he stitched the mask already, but his numbers are kind of overwhelmingly impressive. The problem is the team performance. So I don't know if the narrative can get behind Luka like that. And the other thing that hurts Luka a lot to me is the fact that Russell Westbrook won MVP putting up these kind of numbers, right? Like all everyone talks about now is how Russell Westbrook, that was a bad MVP. And maybe it was kind of year we didn't have anyone else to vote for. And so we just gave it to Westbrook because he averaged a triple double. It's so impressive, First to do it since, what was it, Oscar or whatever, Oscar Robinson. Now, Luka's probably not getting up into the average triple double area like Westbrook is, but if he's close enough, I do think the kind of Westbrook hangover, even though it was what, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, I just doubt we see another MVP from a team. Like that Thunder team back then was not good. Like they were barely above, not barely, but they weren't an impressive record team, even with Paul George and Carmelo and all that. And maybe even SGA was on that team. Well, it couldn't have been because they traded SGA for Paul George, but you get the idea of what I'm trying to say. They're kind of like the Mavericks, where they're not an impressive record. They're right in the mix in the middle of the West, and we just gave it to Westbrook because, oh, he averaged a triple double. So I just don't. I think that's the thing that's going to hurt Luka here. Now, the one that I don't get is this next one is Jayson Tatum. He's plus 10,000 on FanDuel to win MVP. I mean, 100-1. That to me is enough to sprinkle something on. Because typically with MVP, I mean, Jokic did win, I think, his first MVP. Denver was like fourth or fifth. Like they weren't an impressive team, but he had the overwhelming numbers. Most of the time, it comes from a top team. And who would be a best candidate to win MVP than the best player on the best team in the NBA? I mean, Boston is 42 and 12. They're first in the East, they're first overall in the NBA. He's averaging 27 points, 8.6 rebounds, 4.7 assists. So the only thing you can say is, well, the team is so good, that hurts Tatum. Does it? I feel like it kind of bolsters his chance to win MVP. I certainly think he should be valued up near Luka. Luka's 12-1. Why is Tatum 100-1? Like, this is the kind of value that you're looking for if you're playing these kind of things and you want something fun to bet on, because Tatum doesn't feel like the type who's going to take off. Like the Celtics don't feel like they feel like they're on a mission. They know they're really good. You can see the team chemistry together. They enjoy playing together. Now, they might be cautious with people like Al Horford and Porzingis, but they definitely want to stick to the one seed. And I mean, I think the closest team to them right now in the East is the Cavaliers, and they're 5 games back, but in the loss column, anyways. I just don't see Jayson Tatum being like, okay, I got to 65 games. I'm probably only going to play about 70 or 68. I'm going to take a couple off here. Like, obviously, teams toward the end, the last game or two, they take off. That's typical. That's standard. But I don't see Tatum, like, if he feels like this is in grass where he can make a run at the MVP, I think he might try to go for it. His numbers are good enough, and he's the best player on the best team in the NBA. That certainly qualifies him. And you know there is a national media push for a large market like Boston, who hasn't had an MVP in God knows how long. Tatum to me is just a really interesting value play for someone who I think has better odds than 101 to win the MVP this year for what typical is a criteria of an MVP winner. Now, this one is for fun. These next three are kind of for fun here. You just want to play the big number. Jalen Brunson, he's 85 to 1, or plus 8,500, if you want me to say it that way, on FanDuel, averaging 27.5 points, 3.9 rebounds, 6.5 assists. He's fun for kind of the turnaround in New York, or not necessarily turnaround, but you know, they made that trade with OG and flipping RJ Barrett in quickly, and it's just worked out. They had a really nice trade deadline. Everybody loved the moves that they made, Alec Burks, Bojan Bogdanovic, and they're 33-21, fourth in the East. Ultimately, the Knicks probably aren't going to have a good enough record, and ultimately, Jalen Brunson really doesn't have the numbers to back up someone who could actually win MVP. But 85-1, you could do worse. Donovan Mitchell, 150 to 1, 28 points, 5.4 rebounds, 6.3 assists. This is kind of the assist narrative or the stats narrative that Jalen Brunson is going to run into. Ultimately, he probably doesn't have the overpowering numbers to say that Donovan Mitchell is a real candidate to win MVP. The other question is he going to play enough games? I think he's already missed 9 games. I think they're 35 and 17, I believe. So 52 games in, he missed 9. So he's played 43 games. I mean, this guy's got 22 games to go, and there's 30 games left. So he can only miss 8 more to qualify for these awards. So that's ultimately the thing that has would keep me away from him winning this MVP. Or maybe actually sprinkling on this, but 150 to 1 for Donovan Mitchell, who the Cavs looked dead in the water, and he threw them on his back when Evan Mobley and Darius Garland went out, and they made this huge run, and now they're second in the East. So it's fine. I think it's great value for what Donovan Mitchell has done. And of course, the favorite here, the last one I'm going to give you, Anthony Edwards. He's 500 to 1 to win MVP. And this is just the narrative of you're on a really good team. The numbers aren't gaudy. 26 points, 5.2 rebounds, 5.2 assists. That's probably ultimately what hurts him, but he is in a loaded and bloody mess of a Western Conference. And the Timberwolves are 38 and 16 currently, and they're currently first in the West. Now, I'm recording this on Valentine's Day. They could have won, lost tonight. I don't know. A lot of these teams, their records could be a little different based on tonight. I didn't update it before I record this, but they're currently first in the West. So he's the best player on the best team in a tougher conference in the West, right? Top to bottom, the West is a tougher conference. The Boston Celtics are the best team in the league. Jason Tatum's on the best team in the best team in the NBA. Anthony Edwards is the best player on the best team in the West. So 500-1, yeah, I'll take a little bit of that because he's going to get the games. He's going to be probably a first team All-NBA selection if I had to guess, if it keeps up. He's just got to stat pad a little more and have a nice little run here post All-Star break. Like he could have an All-Star game where he wins All-Star MVP, goes for 30, 35, or whatever it is, if he cares enough, which he doesn't seem like a guy who really cares that much. But I think if he goes off in the All-Star game, when the All-Star MVP or something like that, or has a really nice game, 30, 35 points, this could start the ball rolling on a narrative, media narrative shift where Anthony Edwards starts being talked about in the top guys with Jokic, SGA, Giannis, Luka. So I think this is your diamond in the rough narrative shift is Anthony Edwards at 501. So also the other thing I want to give you in, in the past I've talked about dunks and threes. It's a analytics, basketball analytics sites that I really like that does an EPM estimated plus minus and an estimated wins based on the minutes played. And so it kind of shows you a different view of value of NBA players currently in the current season that we're in. So here's the top five players in EPM, which is estimated plus minus. How much better they are estimated based on their minutes, they're adding to their team. So top five. Number one, Joel Embiid. Not going to qualify for the MVP race here because he's not going to have enough games. He's not going to get to the 65 games. Number two, SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Number three is Giannis. Fourth is Luka. And fifth is Jokic, the guy who is currently the number one odds to win the MVP. He had a much better season last year, EPM and estimated wins wise, and Embiid still won it. And now he's fifth this year, behind SGA, Giannis, Luka. Just saying. The top five in estimated wins shifts out a little bit differently. SGA is number one in top five expected wins, which is kind of a combination of estimated plus minus and the actual minutes played. Second is Giannis. Third is Luka. Fourth is Jokic. And fifth is Embiid. Embiid is just fifth because he doesn't have the minutes, right? He'd probably be at the top. He's at the top of EPM. If he has the same minutes as the other four guys above him, he's probably number one estimated wins too, right? But it's interesting that SGA is two in EPM, second in EPM, and number one in estimated wins. Just saying, plus 260, I think, is a good number for someone who should probably be even with Jokic. They should probably both be, in the plus 150 to plus 200 range. And I'm getting SGA at 260 right now. So I'm just saying. And we like the other fun ones like Anthony Edwards, 500 to 1. Tatum, 100 to 1. Like these are the kind of guys to watch coming out of All-Star break because Tatum and Anthony Edwards could have really nice All-Star games where they win an MVP and it starts a narrative shift coming out of that, heading into the final stretch. Now the Grizzlies. We'll end with the Grizzlies here because the Grizzlies are just not very interesting. And that's not their fault. Everybody's injured. Everybody's out. We're playing a bunch of G League players, a bunch of 10-day guys, rookies. It's just like they're just not very interesting right now. They're not a fun watch. They struggle to score 107 points. Like they beat the Rockets tonight, and I think it was the first time they scored 120 plus points in 40 days or something like that. Like, it is a struggle for this team to score points, but they're in games. It's interesting, right? Like the now after the win against the Rockets, they're 19 and 36. And like they don't really have to stealth tank this because it is all 10 days and G League guys and Jaren surrounded by them all. But this is just a master class to me from Kleiman and the coaching staff in how to stealth tank. They brought in a bunch of guys who are competent enough to be competitive, but ultimately they can't finish because they really can't score. So they've done a great job at finding hard playing defensive guys who just flat out can't shoot and score consistently. But tonight against the Houston, they shoot well. They're going to have those nights. Now, coming off a 9-game losing streak or whatever it was for the Grizzlies, they're bound to have a game where they shoot well. Like the guys who can't shoot, eventually they're going to have a night where they shoot well. So I wouldn't say you can expect that to happen a lot going forward. Now, it'll be interesting in bringing Bane back if they start to ramp up Clark for next season, which I think All-Star Break was the kind of targeted time for his return timetable, anyways. If they bring Marcus Smart back, it'll be interesting to see how they approach the final 25 to 27 games for the Grizzlies because, I mean, they're only, I think, 7 games out of the play-in, so it's not impossible, but it would be really hard to do with guys coming back to actually make the play-in. The bottom of the play-in is not great, but it's teams that's probably going to be in there, right? It's the Warriors, the Lakers at the bottom, I think. The Rockets and the Jazz have kind of fallen out. These are all things that we kind of predicted earlier on. If the Grizzlies wanted to make a late push, just to make a late push, they could. I'm just not sure if they will, because even with Bane and Smart and all them coming back, even with all the 10-day and G League guys, like it's just, I don't know how many wins it's going to turn into. So it's just an unfortunate season for them. Me and Cody have talked about it, or I've talked about it on another solo episode about this is, you found Vince Williams through this process. You found GG Jackson through this process. You realized what you needed to get rid of, or what's not working, or who hasn't improved through this process. I'm going to talk about one of those guys here in a second. So it's a very disappointing season to be a completely lost season, but your top three players are 25 and under. Like, this is kind of a necessary evil to figure out what you had because they had such a roster crunch of a lot of young players. They don't really, the coaching staff doesn't really know who to play because they're inconsistent. Now they get to play all the time, and the coaching staff gets to see who's consistent or who could be consistent or who could actually add to this team. And you found Vince and GG just by sheer luck and accident. Of just bad luck of injury. You found those two guys out of that sheer luck. Would we still see them if everybody's still healthy? Probably not. So you can kind of take the good with the bad with this Grizzly season. Unfortunately for me, they're just not fun. They're just not interesting to watch. Like, yes, I like Vince. I like GG. I want to see how they're going to progress. But in the context of what the team is just doing night to night, it's just not an interesting thing to watch for me. So I've been watching them still, just being a loyal fan. But it's not like I'm coming out with these, mind-breaking theories or visions of what, these guys could be. So just trying to get through it. Kind of like everybody in the Grizzlies organization, just trying to get through this year. But let's talk about the two guys who were traded at the deadline. First, can't talk bad about Xavier Tillman. This is basically a salute to him. Did everything that was asked of him, a complete professional, was willing to sit the pine for 30 games, and then when somebody got injured and opportunity arose, he was ready. He was willing to go down to South Haven to the G League to Memphis Hustle and play to stay fresh. Like he was not above that. There was no pride to him in that. And he helped us in the first round last year. Ultimately, he's just not big enough, not talented enough, not consistent enough to where it warranted going into the offseason with him, trying to work out some contract, which the Grizzlies obviously did not feel like they wanted to pay something long term for him. So I love the fact that the Grizzlies did good by him and sent him to the Celtics because he goes to the best team in the NBA. Probably doesn't have a massive role. He's going to have probably the same fill-in role like he did with the Grizzlies when they're full strength, break glass in case of emergency, but he is someone that could step in and help them. And he might get a ring out of it, which might be more that we can say about anybody on this current roster. Like Xavier Tillman could get a ring out of this, and we might never ever see one for this core that we have in their career. So it sucks that he's gone. But I'm happy for Xavier because he might get a chance to actually put a ring on his finger. Now, David Roddy. David Roddy is the interesting one because Roddy had moments where you're like, okay, that's the guy that could be. He could be a really good role player for us, eighth man. Dribble, handle the ball, attack the rim, shoot threes. The problem is he never improved shooting wise. Like, he seemed to actually get worse with more of the exposure this season. And he was the inconsistency of David Roddy. Like, we see the opposite reflection of that with Vince Williams, right? Vince Williams, when he got more consistent time, was consistent and has done well. David Roddy, with his consistent playing time, has been like Zaire Williams, up, down, up, down. Now we have, I said earlier season about seeing the sample size of these guys. We have a 2-year sample size of David Roddy. He's played close to 2,400 career minutes. He's somehow worse shooting as his short career has gone on. I feel like he has gotten better at, not necessarily creation, but getting to the rim. But he is also a guy that I don't see as someone who sees the next move ahead. Like, he is reactive more than he is proactive as a player, which is fine. But it's just not someone who the Grizzlies could see being on their roster going forward. Now, did they overdraft him in the first round? Yes. But has he done a good job for being someone who originally, if you remember David Roddy, was projected to be a late second rounder, might even have gone undrafted. So the fact that he's played 2,400 career minutes in 2 years with plenty of sample size, that's a win for him. He got a contract on it. Now he's on the Phoenix Suns, who are hopefuls to, come out of the bloodbath of the West. Maybe he has a minor contributor role piece on that Suns team. So he has done well for himself from where he was projected originally to be. But through the sample size we saw with the Grizzlies, with more time, he wasn't getting better. And it wasn't going to change. Nothing was going to be different for him. It was always going to be up and down. It was going to be a week on, week off, or a month on, month off. And that's unfortunately the kind of thing that happened with Roddy. So he's done great for what he originally was projected to be as an undersized kind of power forward in college with, a shot, quote unquote, in college. And it just didn't pan out for, I think the Grizzlies just wanted to see with the more minutes that he got this year and the opportunity, I think they wanted to see more consistency. And at least he was an attractive of an option enough for a team like the Suns to be willing to take him on for, that trade pick flip or whatever it was. The thing I want to mention about Roddy, the final thing. Usually Summer League isn't a tell-all, and I'm going to mention my guy that I'm still on an island about, and it's very lonely. There's not anybody around me for 400 miles. It's the Jake LaRavia Island. And I know you're rolling your eyes, but coming out of Summer League this past year, how would you have ranked the second year guys? Coming out of Summer League, you would have probably said the best guys coming out of Summer League for us were Vince, then Jake, then Kenny Lofton, and then Roddy, who Roddy had a terrible Summer League. He was awful. The best two players for the Grizzlies in Summer League were Vince and Jake. Vince got injured, but when Vince played in Summer League, the Grizzlies were really good in Summer League. And Jake was really good for the Grizzlies in Summer League. I think the only reason that we still have Jake on this team and the reason Jake is going to be on this team next year is we literally just have not seen him. We talk about David Roddy in his 2-year career, short 2-year career with the Grizzlies. He's played 2,400 minutes. Jake has played almost 500, or a little bit over 500. He's literally played a fifth of the minutes that Roddy has. I think the Grizzlies are more invested to see what Jake looks like, because they did move up and use a top 20 pick on him. I think they want to see some actual sample size before they just say, okay, it's just not going to work out. Because in his first year, before he had all the injuries, he was a 34% 3-point shooter. And in theory, that would improve. But year two, he shot like 20%, but he's barely played. So, of course, the best skill in the NBA is availability. And this happens too with players. Guys that look like they're going to pan out, they just cannot stay healthy. And this might be the story of his career early on, is he just has, this would have been a great month or two for Jake to get some sample size minutes on him to see if he could get back to the first couple months form of his rookie year shooting the ball, or if he's just going to be like David Roddy Zaire, up, down, up, down. I just don't think Kleiman and the coaching staff are going to give up on him yet because the sample size is just not there for them to make an evaluation. Now, if he continues to be injured, you're probably going to cut ties, right? Because that's just like he's just not panning out for you. Now, the hard thing for Jake is this month, last month, a month or two, like I said, would have been great for him to showcase. With the returning unit, with Vince and Gigi emerging, now you're talking about where does he fit in for next year? And so injuries, like little nicks and injuries, like arm thing or a back, or now it's an ankle, whatever it was, the eyes or something, for Jake. This unfortunately just might be the story of his first couple years with the Grizzlies. And they're just like, all right, it's not working out. We have to move on, man. Other guys are available to play and improving. And Jake goes to somewhere else like the Bulls or, someone bad like the Hornets or the Magic or something like that and actually pans out. But it's just not with the Grizzlies because of the injury stuff. So I'm just saying, I think that's the only reason. I think people are still, Grizzlies fans are questioning why Jake LaRavia is still on this team. And I think that's probably the biggest reason why. I think that's the reason Roddy is gone and why Jake is still here. And it could also be the fact that nobody wanted Jake. But I do think there's still some value in him that we're just waiting on. And the problem is, we've been waiting on him, and we just haven't seen it yet because he hasn't actually been on the court. And that just might be the story of his career. Who knows? But I think that's all. I'm going to wrap this up for this solo one for now. So if you're still here listening to this, thank you for making this long. I know you probably turned it off after I mentioned the name Jake LaRavia. But thanks for tuning in for this week. Hopefully, Cody will be back next week. It's kind of getting to this point of the season where it's not necessarily the doldrums of the NBA season, but with this little break, I start to get more into college basketball, kind of prep for March Madness. So if you've been following us for a little while, I'm going to have a lot of March Madness stuff coming up over, when we get closer to Selection Sunday, which I think is, a little over a month away is like the start of the tournament. So it's coming up fast, 3 weeks or so. So we'll be talking more about college basketball coming up. But Cody will be back next week. Hope you enjoyed this episode. See you guys. Enjoy the All-Star break and All-Star weekend.